Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Josh Brown and Warner Brothers are at it again.
Please don't give me any bad news, Scott. They are so bad when it comes to games, film, and television. What are they up to now?
And even letting us record a YouTube video. We recorded this before, and then the dull camera ate it. So thanks, Warner Brothers. Thanks.
That's your fault too.
Both of those brothers, and I don't like them. Warner Brothers themselves, though, have been speaking at a recent financial event, and their global streaming and games CEO, JB Perrette, has pretty much just said they're going to do all the things that nobody wants them to do in terms of investing in live services, free-to-play models, getting away from AAA games, getting away from single-player stuff, and just doubling down on the multiplayer space, doubling down on all the things that so far haven't been working out very well for them. Whether that be something like Multiverses going offline last year because it had a 24-hour player peak of 101 players. No one cared, I know, over on Steam. I guess you could also say the console stuff might have propped it up, but not that much. Or the state that Suicide Squad's in. Anyway, getting back to what Perrette has most recently said, we're doubling down on games as an area where we think there is a lot more growth opportunity that we can tap into with the IP that we have and some of the capabilities we have at the studio where we're uniquely positioned as both a publisher and a developer of games. Rather than just launching a one and done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, the Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that is a live service where people can live and work and play and build in that world in an ongoing basis? I do want to throw in here that in regards to sales stuff, because it should be pretty obvious at this point what's working, Hogwarts Legacy sold over 24 million copies. It's made over $1 billion in revenue. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League has, by Warner Brothers' own admission, fallen short of expectations, and that game's player numbers continue to hemorrhage. So you have a straight, obvious thing of what you should be focusing on, and it ain't live service stuff. There's a bit more in here in regards to the approach to mobile games, etc., but just thoughts on this.
I don't understand. And we've done so many videos and podcasts on WB so far.
Even this morning?
Pretty much even this morning, I got eaten. thank you, Mr. Brothers. where we've talked about, you know, them saying this exact thing of how they want to essentially wring the most money out of these IPs that they own, and that for them is making them live service or free to play or focusing on mobile iterations of them. But like you just said, how do you look at the failure of Suicide Squad and go, the problem is we didn't go hard enough. We didn't go live service enough on that thing.
The more reason premium that currencies.
It didn't resonate with audiences, the reason that it didn't make more money is that it wasn't more of a live service, that it wasn't more of a grind, that it didn't have more microtransactions in it. To me, that is absolutely crazy in light of, yeah, like you said, you know, them having Harry Potter sell 24 million copies off the back of it being a single-player dedicated game. Off the climate we're in right now, where we see successes like Baldur's Gate 3, you know, an independently developed game, smash sales expectations, dominate both critical discourse and commercial discourse by selling over 10 million copies. How do you look at that and look at the releases from this year, like their own Suicide Squad, like Skull and Bones, being these live service or at least live service adjacent experiences that don't resonate with audiences, and go, you know what, the issue is those other games. We're doing actually a cracking job. We just need to double down on the stuff that people don't like. Are you mad?
There's so much stuff in here. Like, it's such a wider conversation about the general big business approach to what makes a game fun, what makes a game worth doing. But it is so endemic of the current spot we're in with the gaming industry, where you look at the likes of Sony, you look at the layoffs that they have across the board, the likes of Insomniac, the Naughty Dog, etc., and the way that they were trying to pivot everything into live service stuff. The fact that Connie Booth left after 34 years over at Sony, someone who was very much responsible for shepherding so many single-player titles over the years, and the behind-the-scenes stuff, according to God of War creator David Jaffe, Kathy saying that internally there was various conversations happening around trying to get single player teams to work on multiplayer stuff and it not working. You can see that with Rocksteady going from the Arkham series to Suicide Squad, and as much love, care and attention has been put into Suicide Squad, it isn't their bread and butter. It's not what they got in the industry to start making, and I feel like the overall push to just force everything to be a monetizable grind isn't what the developers want to make, the art departments, the coders, etc., and it's not what we want to play either. And it's not like you can't have something in the middle. Helldivers 2 proved you can have live service models in there. It just needs to respect the player. You need to be gameplay forward and make something worthwhile, and maybe you monetize it after. I always think in this regard of something like No Man's Sky, where you know, Sean Murray and the team over at Hello Games obviously have one of the most mismarketed games of all time back in 2016, but they're still on the apology tour in 2024. That game's had like 15 expansions at this point. However, if they introduced microtransactions, and the fandom are asking them to put them in, like, let's give you more money at this point, that would be a case where something has the goodwill, has the reason behind it, as opposed to leading with as many monetization loops as possible and hoping people stick around for it. I hate this stuff, and it's worth saying that coming out of this general conference, they singled out four franchises, Mortal Kombat, Game of Thrones, DC overall, and Harry Potter overall, as what they want to make into live service monetization stuff going forward. What do you think of all that stuff?
Listen, you made a lot of good points there. You made a lot of good points. I want to kind of go back to what you mentioned about, was it the David Jaffe quote, where you're talking about publishers making developers known for a specific style of game that has resonated, and then saying, essentially, can you do us a live service? Can you do us a multiplayer game? To me, that is, you know, emblematic of the fundamental misunderstanding, I think, that a lot of these executives coming in from maybe a film background or another area and looking at, again, as they've admitted, video games is a growth area they can invest in, just not understanding, one, how video game teams work, and two, how the video game market works, right? Because you can look at someone like Rocksteady or look at someone like BioWare previously and see that, like, these are teams that have been made up and built around their single-player, story-focused experiences. It's not to say they can't do anything else, but to suddenly expect them to create a 10 out of 10 billion dollar live service game when they haven't even got any experience with those kind of games is just crazy to me, right? It's like, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding, and I think that's what's hurting, because they're not seeing that as a problem. They're probably coming in saying, well, why isn't this better? Like, you've made great games in the past, why can't you do us one of these? It's like, that's where I think all these things can live alongside each other, because why can't Rocksteady continue, if they want to, of course, keep making these single player experiences that they were originally built around, alongside Warner Brothers investing in a specific live service team to handle the live service spin-offs and the multiplayer games or the free-to-play games, like, specialise in that over here and specialise in that over there.
Whereas, like, you look at the way Sony are doing it at the minute, or, like, the Jim Ryan era, which obviously coming to an end because, you know, Jim Ryan has stepped down, he's stepping down, he's still doing a few press announcements and things like that, but he very much greenlit a whole bunch of live service stuff all at once, and you can see the corporate mentality, and I'm making this, I'm oversimplifying this, but in a way it's kind of how I view the business decisions anyway, just saying, what if we had 15 Fortnites? What if we had 15 Robloxes?
Yeah.
Let's just greenlight a bunch of them all at once, step back from the single player AAA stuff, which is costing too much money over on the Spider-Man 2 The Last of Us side, and just have a whole bunch of Fortnites taken over all at once without doing the legwork in the first place to make sure that those things are actually respected and worthwhile. You know, Fortnite got there over time. It definitely landed very well in 2017, but they had to supplant that, you know, attention over time. The general approach at the minute from the more disconnected people at the top, let's say, is just let's monetize this stuff as much as possible. And I also want to throw in the importance of Roblox. There's a really good documentary over on People Make Games YouTube channel. It's phenomenal. Chris Bright used to work over at Video Gamer, and they do various documentaries, one of them being on the reality of how Roblox monetizes itself. So many premium currencies, so many creators making skins, making assets, etc., but it's all kept within the walls of Roblox. This quote, where Perret says he wants to make sure that people are living, working, building, and playing on an ongoing basis, I think they don't necessarily just want the Fortnite model, which is what Suicide Squad was chasing.
Yeah.
I think they want the user-generated content model as well, and they want to monetize that as much as possible. Give people a fandom, put walls around it, and you just play in the sandbox, and they take a slice every now and then.
Yeah, man, I think that's absolutely spot on. You know, you've mentioned a lot of great things there, Scott Tilford. I'll try to break them all down from my perspective.
You are, take back. Michael.
That work line in particular, you know, when we come in, even though you can probably tell that we're not huge fans of these executives over at WhatCulture.com and the decisions they make like this, but I try to never take something said in, like, bad faith. And I hope I'm not doing that here, but I hear him say, you know, we want to build these games and these projects where people can work and live in them. And I just think that's what you see games as, right? You see them as work. You see them as something that people people to see them as something they clock into every day and clock out of. And they put their time in and they probably spend, you know, $5 on a skin while they're there. Maybe they'll buy an expansion pack. They'll do their dailies. They'll clock out. They'll come back the next day and they'll keep working in your ecosystem. And you'll get the retention. You'll get the money. And like you said, keep taking a slice of it every time. That's such a cynical way to view games as an art, games as a hobby, games as whatever you want to call it, and is, you know, again, I think emblematic of their mentality and how they view games as just this money-making endeavor and how they'll almost never be satisfied. You know, earlier on I was talking about how do they view one thing as a success and one thing as, you know, a failure. And I think even when they have successes in the single-player game space, you know, the 24 million copies sold, something like Mortal Kombat, you know, selling well, or Shadow of Mordor selling well back in the day, like, they're not viewing all of those copies sold and all of that money made as a success. They're lamenting the lost sales that they could have got on top of that if those games were live services. So then they can't look at $1 billion and go, that's amazing. They're kicking themselves and thinking, oh, we probably could have made $2 billion if we had live service elements in, which to me is a complete fantasy, because we've seen that the reason people bought those games was for the single player aspect, and the reason people didn't buy Suicide Squad et al. Is because of the live service stuff. So that money that you're imagining isn't even real. It's not even necessarily what you would have gotten. They've been chasing that, what do you call it, a blue whale?
Well, they've been chasing that, whatever it is.
Every publisher has been chasing that idea of, if we just get this magic game that synergizes all these things, it'll be an excuse to print money.
Yes.
But 9 times out of 10, it's an excuse to lose money every time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And that's the thing. I'm not seeing a single one of these where you look at it and go, that was a huge success. You've got the likes of Helldivers 2, but it's not the same thing. Like, the general mentality that went into Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is not something. In the final product, that feels like it respects the player's time. Look at the way that that game ends. I'm not going to do specific plot spoilers, but there is an infinite endgame component to that. The way that Warner Brothers handled Shadow of War, the follow-up to Mordor's Endgame, again, they had an over-monetized microtransaction fest, all the orcs in crates stuff that was eventually taken out of the game because that kind of killed the whole franchise. franchise. We haven't seen the Nemesis system since then,
yeah,
because of how badly that stuff went down. And like I said, at the minute, we're going through all the fallout for Suicide Squad. I just feel like overtly it's not what people want. And you said this in the previous version of this video that got eaten by the camera.
Try not to repeat ourselves, David. I don't think it's working.
No, we're doing all right so far. But that whole idea of now, they just say the quiet part loud. They just announce that they're going to be doing this stuff years in advance. And you can feel it in the game design itself. In years gone by, maybe you would speculate that this thing feels a bit cold, this thing feels a bit tacked on. Whereas now, Suicide Squad feels exactly like what you thought it was going to be going in before they then afterwards announce they're going to do that for everything else going forward.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, like previously, I think there was always speculation over who wanted to pivot into live services. There was enough obfuscation around that where you could say maybe Anthem was the game that BioWare always wanted to make. And there was that kind of like, you know, you couldn't really say one way or another whose creative vision that was. But now you get quotes like this that, yeah, just say the quiet part loud. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about these games feeling like they have executive mandates, and that's literally what's being admitted now. Like, they're admitting that these big IPs that they own, these big billion-dollar franchises, they're looking to pivot them all into this direction, whether that's, you know, taking teams that are known for single-player games and, like, asking them to add this stuff in. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just an open admittance now, and it makes me angry because we all can sit here and you in the comments can say that's going to fail. It's failed so many times before. These guys are missing the point massively. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they can miss the point massively and still be secure in their jobs, still fall upwards in their career. These guys are not going to be the people who take the brunt of the failure when this endeavor inevitably fails and it doesn't make money and things come in under expectations. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to be them in the firing line. It's going to be the likes of Rocksteady. It's going to be the likes of NetherRealm Studios, even, depending on how Mortal Kombat goes in mm-hmm. the future. And that just is an absolute tragedy, man, because, like, you know, we were talking about Suicide Squad. Like, you can tell there's good quality in that game. You can tell there's passion in that game. There are so many good things about it. Same with Mortal Kombat, same with all of the franchises, you know, they've all got quality developers working on these projects, and it's going to be those guys, as we've seen throughout this year, that, you know, take the blame for these games and these, you know, approaches not doing well.
It's just that wider assumption that any fan of a given property will just accept anything, that you'll just go with it because it's DC themed, you'll go with it because it's Game of Thrones themed, etc. And just not having to put the quality in, and just trying to extract as much money from your fan love as possible. Just get in the fan minds and hammer away at the love and get all the money out.
It's another one of those things where we know that's not true. It's just not true. You know, we did that video on the death of the industry, or, you know, everything that's going wrong with the industry right now. And, you know, developers who are doing all of these layoffs, who are restructuring their teams, you know, they're talking about how established IP, in terms of, you know, pulling from movies or whatever, like, isn't the thing that works necessarily. Mm. And part of that is because, you know, they, in EA, for instance, has to pay Disney, you know, X amount of the profits if they want to make a Star Wars game, or Sony with Marvel. And admittedly, WB doesn't have that same issue because they own all of the licenses that they're making. But there is an admission there that, you know, you can't just make an Avengers game, call it the Avengers, and use the market familiarity to have that sell gangbusters. Like, the market rejected that. And even games like Guardians of the Galaxy, which, you know, that brand is well known, that brand is well loved, even in an MCU slump, Guardians 3 did really well, did huge at the box office. Like, that was a great game, that had an established brand, and it still didn't work. It still didn't find that audience. Like, I think executives like this completely misunderstand that gamers are smart, or at least
audiences
audiences are smart across the board. Yeah, it's not just gamers. Mm-hmm. And when, like you said, we're not just going to see the thing that we're familiar with and just buy it and slop it up and shovel it into our mouths while paying a fiver for every 10 minutes of that roller coaster or that treadmill. Like, that's just not how the business works, evidently. But that's the future these guys want to pivot into with Mortal Kombat, with DC and whatever, and only rely on those franchises. Where I keep saying it, man, like, I think video games as an industry are like one of the big last bastions of originality. People love original IP, people love original ideas. Mm-hmm. And if you just keep serving them up recognizable IP and expecting them to flock out, like, that's not going to work. It didn't work with licensed games in the past, you know, and it's certainly not going to work now with free-to-play and mobile games.
No, and it's like anything where you're saying, you know, the counterpoint would be like, well, why can't we have original ideas, original gameplay ideas within a branded framework? Just because there's always some brand Bible thing, that character wouldn't say that, we can't have that plot line, we need to maintain that this works for all audiences or whatever it is, you'll never get something as freeing as an original IP as long as it's within a specific brand, especially when it's locked down as much as Warner Brothers have with the DCs, the Mortal Kombats, etc. The final thing is just the way that IGN wrote this entire finance call up, saying that the general tone of the conference was steering into mobile, you know, live service, free-to-play, stuff like that. And I just want to mention, you know, you can look at the likes of Mortal Kombat Onslaught, which is like a turn-based, you know, microtransaction-fueled mobile version of Mortal Kombat, but like I said, it's turn-based. Contrast that with the way Mortal Kombat 1 plays, the console version. I also wanted to say, you know, if you contrast the likes of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth from right now, contrast that with Final Fantasy VII Evercrisis, which is the Square Enix's version of that, where you get the original game, but you're paying to put characters into scenarios that weren't there before. It's just an infinitely monetizable thing where you pay for different skins, etc. You can see the version of what they want to tap into. You can feel these types of games coming up. And I just, maybe the money's there, but it's not worthwhile.
No,
maybe
you've
taken advantage of a fandom long enough to say that thing made some money, but it's not the future.
Again, we said this when we did our bigger podcast, which this is kind of becoming right now on Warner Brothers. You know, we talked about them just making the same mistakes that people who have been in the video game business for a long time have already made. Mm. Like, to me, Warner Brothers right now are making the exact same mistakes that Square Enix has made over the past few years and EA has made over the past few years. But perhaps, again, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it. Perhaps because the executives that are in charge now of the game division worked in film previously and are kind of fresh to it, they're just repeating what the market has already told a bunch of other studios, which to me is just like absolutely crazy. And look, I think one final thing, at least on my part, to add to this is I think this is a very interesting write-up and a very interesting quotage, for lack of a better term. Because to me, it also indicates that the live service future and the free-to-play future and the mobile future that we're going to get will be even kind of cheaper and grubbier than what they're kind of focusing on now. Like, I think it's really interesting that they lump in Suicide Squad along with Hogwarts as example of AAA games that they kind of think are too volatile. And I think, like, well, if Suicide Squad, with all of its live services, is too much of a risk, what kind of experiences do you want? Like, do you want just like cheapy games that you don't have to spend much time into, that you don't have to risk resources with, and kind of prioritize free-to-play games and mobile games? Is that what you want going forward? Do you want to spend, instead of $100 million on a game, $20 million and try to get that return back? Like, I don't think everything should be AAA, but if you're thinking, you know, the likes of a Suicide Squad or Mortal Kombat or whatever are too risky, like, I don't want to see a future as well where Mortal Kombat only exists to be a cheap free-to-play mobile game. You know, like, we surely these things can exist together, but that really seems like what they're pivoting into to me. Spend less money, make it more grindy equals maximum profits, you know?
You can see from the corporate side, they've seen the boom of the farming games. They've seen the booms of Fortnite and Roblox. They have various IP that they can tap into. Let's just mush all that stuff together and give you the infinitely replayable space that you can live in and build in. And the fans will make all the assets, so we don't have to worry about that. And they'll AI generate the rest of it. Like, it's a very cold way of looking at this, but when they're saying it this clearly, and the projections are all the way through until about 2028. So this is going to be the rest of the generation.
And it sucks because, I mean, it all sucks, but they could make great games with these IP. Like, Mortal Kombat doesn't have to have all of that grindy live service stuff in it. Like, previous Mortal Kombat games have been so content rich with so many cool unlockables that don't feel like they're nickel and diming you every single second. I look at something like Game of Thrones, which they keep mentioning is like an untapped billion-dollar franchise that they want to do more with, and I think, like, in the current RPG boom that we're currently experiencing with Final Fantasy and Dragon's Dogma, Rise of the Ronin, Baldur's Gate 3 last year.
Infinite, like, Wealth, brother.
Infinite Wealth, which I always forget, but is doing really well.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's an open goal to do a big AAA RPG based on Game of Thrones. You've already got, like, the world, you've got these factions, you've got the possibility for in-depth combat and in-depth decision-making, but what we're probably going to get, according to this mandate, is a Game of Thrones mobile game, a Game of Thrones Facebook game, and they're not interested in doing anything actually interesting or playing to these IP strengths, so why should I care?
I think, like, for me, like, a closing thing is, like, you look at the way Mortal Kombat 1 went, where they wanted to soft reboot the entire IP, they wanted to do all these new ideas, this new timeline, it's a whole new thing, it felt really fresh. The beginning, sort of half of that story feels really fresh and propulsive, and towards the end, they bring in a whole bunch of multiversal elements and give you an infinite endgame, and then try and monetize that. There was a whole thing last year about blocking part of the invasions mode. In terms of a barrier you couldn't pass without a DLC character's fatality, which you wouldn't have unless you paid the extra money for it, and it just is that idea of trying to monetize the love, trying to monetize the fan base, trying to over-monetize the people who did show up in the first place and paid the premium entry fee to get in, and then being over-monetized going forward. They're going to try a whole bunch of different things here. Maybe it will be, like you said, the reduced production budgets. I guarantee that some executives have learned from the likes of Palworld. What will people pay for? Can we do a Palworld adjacent production budget for a Game of Thrones game or a DC game or whatever? And it'll just be a hell of a train wreck for the next few years. But as it stands right now, it's not looking good.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.